If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Get up to 30% off well-crafted and personalized gifts from participating shops until May 12th. This year, embrace your creative side. You know, the side your mom gave you. And shop Etsy for custom jewelry, style pieces, home decor, and extra special items she'll adore. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
Stock market today suffered its worst day since 2008, while Trump suffered his worst day since, I don't know, yesterday?
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth talks to MSNBC's Nicole Wallace. Plus, just for this podcast, Nicole also takes a few more questions backstage at Studio AG. But first, a closer look.
As the president continues to lie about the coronavirus outbreak, we are now seeing what it's like when a lifelong scam artist is in charge of responding to a public health crisis. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. When it comes to his presidency, there's nothing Donald Trump cares about more than the stock market. He brags about it virtually every chance he gets. And on Friday, during a visit to CDC headquarters in Atlanta, Trump predicted that the coronavirus outbreak, which has now hit more than 100,000 cases worldwide and over 500 here in the U.S., would actually be good for the economy.
You just addressed the economic piece, though, because there's obviously a lot of fear about the economy.
It is a fact. Now, you know, if you know anything about me, I like when people happen to stay in the United States and spend their money in the United States, okay? So I think people are staying in the United States more. They're going to spend their money in the United States.
That's right. Trump thinks coronavirus will help the economy because people will spend money here in the U.S. In fact, I've been buying toilet paper at Costco that I'm going to resell at a profit if things get worse. But there you go. The president said on Friday that coronavirus would actually be good for the economy. Let's see how the stock market did when it opened on Monday morning.
We're coming on the air with breaking news. This is the New York Stock Exchange. The trading day is just beginning on Wall Street, and there are fears that the Dow will drop and drop quickly, and we're already seeing that.
The Dow Industrials are off right now 17 points or 6.5%. You've got the NASDAQ off 5.8%, and then the S&P down 6.3%.
At this point, I've never seen this much anxiety on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. There are traders running everywhere. We are watching these levels.
Has trading now stopped? Has it hit that 7% trigger?
Trading has stopped because we've seen a drop of 7%, which means trading will stop for the next 15 minutes.
I'm selling this toilet paper for $1,000 a sheet. That's right. 3 days. 3 days after Trump predicted coronavirus would be good for the economy, the stock market plunged so much when it opened, the trading had to be stopped. The drop was so bad, the red arrow on the TV screen grew legs and ran away. Now, the sell-off wasn't due entirely to coronavirus. It was also due in large part to war over oil prices launched by Saudi Arabia. Still, a lot of people are understandably worried. And while there's no reason to panic, governments across the world are taking extreme measures to mitigate the outbreak. Over the weekend, Italy put millions of people on lockdown in regions hit hardest by the outbreak, where people were rushing to catch the last trains leaving Milan before the lockdown took effect.
Officials in Italy putting 16 million people on lockdown. Now, that's a quarter of the country's population. Video shows people rushing to catch the last trains as they left northern Italy.
This is what Italians look like when they're rushing. Obviously, in Italy, to run for a train is a fate worse than death. I'm shocked they didn't have cigarettes in one hand and Aperol spritzes in the other. I mean, if you've ever been to Italy, you know that for Italians, what you just saw there is DEFCON 1. I mean, in Italy, stores just close in the afternoon so people can nap, and planes just take off whenever they want. At the Rome airport, most departure times say, it leaves when it leaves. Capiche? And here in the U.S., New York, the state with the most cases, is currently taking its own precautions to deal with the coronavirus. Governor Andrew Cuomo declared a state of emergency as the number of cases rises to over 100, with thousands more being asked to self-quarantine. And on Sunday, Cuomo offered this advice to New Yorkers taking the subway.
If you can move to a train car that is not as dense, if you see a packed train car, let it go by, wait for the next train.
I'm sorry, did you think people were picking crowded cars on purpose? Every train car is packed.
Excuse me, where? So sorry, where are the less dense train cars?
That's why those Showtime subway dancers learned how to hang upside down from the roof so they could fit onto a packed car. As a general rule, anytime you see a subway car that isn't packed, that means one of two things. Either it's 4 a.m. on a Tuesday, or someone did something unspeakable. Oh, look, honey, this one's almost empty. Oh, that smell. Oh, my God. Now, there's no reason to panic. In fact, as bad as things seem, there are reasons for optimism. China and South Korea have seen slowdowns in new cases, and people in areas affected by the outbreak have been making the best of the situation. For example, in Wuhan, China, the epicenter of the outbreak, students who've been on lockdown were assigned homework through an app until they figured out a way to get out of it. In lockdown Wuhan, teachers used an app called DingTalk to set up homework. Kids realized if it got enough one-star reviews, it would be removed from the App Store. Thousands of reviews flooded in, and DingTalk's ratings fell from 4.9 to 1.4 overnight. That is amazing. Although, it is a bummer for the people who built that app. I mean, you conceive of an app, you develop it, you go through rounds and rounds of beta testing, you finally have a successful launch, and then this brings it down. Hey, what happened to that app of yours? Oh, a bunch of dickhead kids one-starred me. Well, you made a homework app, so maybe you're the dickhead. But honestly, maybe we should put these kids in charge of the coronavirus response, because while they were out there coming up with ways to shut down apps, the most powerful man in the world was visiting CDC headquarters in Atlanta on Friday in a hat and windbreaker, looking not like a man steady at the helm of a crisis, but like a hungover Little League umpire. Seriously, man, what is this look? You are inside. Are you expecting a thunderstorm? I heard this was a laboratory, and as everyone knows, laboratories run on lightning because that's how they invented Frankenstein. And as countries across the world were testing tens of thousands of people a day and taking extreme measures to mitigate the outbreak, our president was at the CDC talking about how he was getting his information, not from doctors, but from his favorite channel, Fox News.
As of the time I left the plane with you, we had 240 cases, and that's at least what was on a very fine network known as Fox News.
Why are you getting your information about how many cases there are from Fox News? You're at the CDC. You are surrounded. You are currently surrounded by doctors. Just turn around and ask one of them.
Doctor, give it to me straight. Did you see me on Hannity last night? Was I good?
Kind of terrifying that in the middle of a global pandemic, Trump is getting his information from Fox News, because at the same time Trump is listening to Fox, public health officials are worried about making him angry by telling the truth. For example, Politico reported that public health groups are hoping to convey factual information to Americans without antagonizing Trump. They're afraid of antagonizing Trump. That is insane. They're talking about the president the way a mailman talks about a Rottweiler, which makes sense because Trump always looks like he's about to bite an intruder on the ass. And you can tell that the cult of personality that insulates Trump from dissent is having an impact, because Trump appointees keep going out of their way to compliment him in situations where it's totally unnecessary, from the health secretary to the head of the CDC, to the Surgeon General just yesterday on CNN.
Thank you, Mr. President, for gathering your public health experts here today and for your strong leadership in keeping America safe.
I want to thank you for your decisive leadership in helping us, you know, put public health first.
We want to make sure if folks are out there who are at risk, they're taking extra precautions. But speaking of being at risk, mm-hmm. the president, he sleeps less than I do, and he's healthier than what I am.
No, he's not. There's no way he's healthier than you are. I mean, look at him. He doesn't even know the difference between inside and outside. I mean, I expect him to bring an umbrella, but he doesn't know how to use one. Trump is desperately trying to paint a rosy picture to help both his political fortunes and the economy, which he sees as crucial to his reelection. For example, on Friday, Trump actually admitted that he wanted to keep people trapped on a cruise ship where passengers and crews were diagnosed with coronavirus, rather than bringing them onto the U.S. mainland because it would increase the number of coronavirus cases in the U.S., and that would make him look bad.
I mean, frankly, if it were up to me, I would be inclined to say, leave everybody on the ship for a period of time and you use the ship as your base. But a lot of people would rather do it a different way. They'd rather quarantine people on the land. Now, when they do that, our numbers are going to go up. Okay, our numbers are going to go up. They would like to have the people come off. I'd rather have the people stay, but I'd go with them. I told them to make the final decision. I would rather, because I like the numbers being where they are, I don't need to have the numbers double because of one ship.
I'm sorry, but keeping people trapped on a cruise ship, even if they don't have coronavirus, should be an impeachable offense because nothing good ever happens on a cruise ship. You never, never once I've heard a positive news story about a cruise ship. You never read the headline, cruise ships' toilets work great. This is yet another reminder that Trump is a lifelong scam artist who is constantly running a con and trying to BS his way out of that con. It's obvious he doesn't have a plan for anything other than his own self-preservation. For example, there's been a major delay in testing capacity due to CDC errors, which experts have called a national disgrace. Last week, the White House said it would fail to meet its goal of providing enough coronavirus test kits for 1 million people by the end of the week. And Vice President Mike Pence said they won't have enough tests to meet demand. Then out of nowhere, during his visit to the CDC on Friday, Trump not only said everyone could get a test, he said the tests were perfect and for some reason compared them to his infamous phone call with the president of Ukraine. You know, the one that got him impeached.
Anybody that wants a test can get a test. Anybody that needs a test gets a test. They're there. They have the tests. And the tests are beautiful. Anybody that needs a test gets a test. But anybody that needs a test can have a test. They're all set. They have them out there. And the tests are all perfect. Like, the letter was perfect. The transcription was perfect.
Anyone who needs a test gets the test. I need a test, not you.
You're comparing the test for a global pandemic to the thing that got you impeached? That's not a good comparison. That's like borrowing your friend's Kia and saying, this reminds me a lot of my last car, the one I totaled after driving it straight into a Wendy's. What we're seeing now is what happens when a lifelong scam artist has to manage a major public health crisis. Trump has always been able to BS and threaten and litigate his way out of accountability and avoid consequences. And now, as he oversees the government's response to a global public health emergency, he's trying to do the same thing. And it's worth remembering that Trump's scams didn't just include a fake charity or a scam university. He also ran a scam healthcare company.
The Daily Beast reports today on the vitamin-selling venture launched in 2009 by a company called the Trump Network. It was a multi-level marketing scheme along the lines of Amway or Mary Kay. The scheme peddled a number of diet products and sham nutritional supplements, including a supposedly customized vitamin regime requiring users to send in a urine sample packed inside a very classy, special Trump-branded box. According to Harvard doctor and supplement expert interviewed by the Daily Beast, the process is, quote, a scam.
For $140, you could send in your urine and get a tailored version of vitamins, none of which was proven by science, by the way. They would be delivered to you, and you'd pay, you know, $70 a month, every month, to increase your health.
I'm sorry, but how do you tailor vitamins for someone based on their urine? You don't want, like, a cheek swab or a blood sample? That should be a red flag right away. That would be like if you signed up for 23andMe, and in order to give you your family history, they made you in a paper bag. So that's the guy overseeing the government's response to a global pandemic that threatens to overwhelm the U.S. healthcare system. And just as he lied about his scam vitamin kits, he's trying to lie about the coronavirus outbreak. Here he is on Friday justifying his lies by claiming he has a natural ability for dealing with this kind of thing.
You know, my uncle is a great person. He was at MIT. He taught at MIT for, I think, like a record number of years. He was a great super genius. Dr. John Trump. I like this stuff. I really get it. People are surprised that I understand it. Every one of these doctors said, how do you know so much about this? Maybe I have a natural ability. Maybe I should have done that instead of running for president.
Yes. Yes, you should have. You should have applied to medical school, and you should have filmed the reactions of the faculty of that medical school reading your application, and you should have posted that on TikTok and gotten 1 trillion views. Seriously, you think instead of running for president at age 70, you should have become a doctor instead? The only white coat you should be wearing is a straitjacket. Also, there is no way. I'm sorry, but there is no way a doctor said the words, how do you know so much about this stuff? I mean, maybe one of them said it sarcastically. Like, you said, I hear the coronavirus will go away when it gets less cloudy. And they said, oh, man, how do you know so much about this stuff? Also, you think you know about science because your uncle was a doctor? People don't just automatically know what their uncles know. Otherwise, we would all know the lyrics to every Steely Dan song. This is what happens when you put a lifelong con artist and pathological liar with zero intellectual curiosity in charge of the government. When an emergency comes along, he doesn't care about solving it. He just wants to BS his way through it. And now he's actively making the situation worse. The president is a deluded idiot who thinks he's a
super genius.
This has been A Closer Look.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Our guest tonight, host Deadline White House weekdays at 4 p.m. on MSNBC. She joins Brian Williams and Rachel Maddow tomorrow at 7 p.m. for Special Decisions 2020 Democratic primary coverage. Please welcome back to the show Nicole Wallace, everyone. How are you?
I'm great.
Welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me
back. I want to get right into it. You were an actual communications director at a White House.
Not a celebrated one at that.
No. Well, we didn't realize at the time that how important it was to have communications directed. you worked in the Bush White House, and now you are seeing this White House, which is not, I would say communications is not a strength. To be fair, they have very few strengths. But what do you feel at a time like this when messaging is so important? How do you perceive what's happening right now?
So this is one of those things that I wish we were wrong about, people who are critical and who see the flaws. This is one of those ones where when Donald Trump says, oh, a miracle's going to take corona away, that's like the one in a million things where I'm like, oh, I wish he were right.
Yeah.
But the problem, and look, here's the other thing. I mean, we have a global pandemic, and he's liar, pants on fire president. Who saw this coming? I mean, this was where it was always going to land.
Right.
We were always going to need him to have more credibility on the world stage, to level with us, and to be more competent than he is when our health and our family's health was on the line. And sadly, it took something like this, I think, to even shake the confidence of some members of his base. The virus doesn't have a political affiliation.
I guess time will tell if it actually is shaking the confidence of his base, because it is interesting. Certainly in the early stages, we are seeing very smart people, very talented people who are trying to deal with this crisis, who are, as we pointed out, also trying to do this sort of triangulation of also figuring out how not to offend him. Are you surprised when you see...
Oh, the dear leader stuff?
Yeah, when you see brilliant doctors who are making the choice to say, like, and also, let me just say, you are doing a really good job, too.
Yeah, look, I don't know where that chip comes from. I mean, I think it's part of the reward structure, and he's very, you know, off with your head, anyone that doesn't tell him he's brilliant. But, I mean, you cover the same stories I do every day. The things people say to him, especially when the public safety is on the line, are really, really troubling.
You obviously went through some crises in your time as a communications director. Each is different. How did you deal with the ones that you faced in your time in the White House?
We were ready for the bird flu. That was the pandemic that we were prepared for. And people like to joke that Bush wasn't steeped in history, but he was reading books about the plague. We were all given sort of take-home reading about how things spread. We were drilling on Saturdays and Sundays, red teams and blue teams, for how something would, go from city to city. And you look at the way this White House communicates, it's all about goosing the stock market. I mean, no one seems to even have in mind. If you've got kids in school and you go to work, you rely on sort of the infrastructure and the trustworthy flow of information to make decisions about how to keep your family safe. And that's where I think if this goes on, the coronavirus is not Donald Trump's fault, but everything he's done in exaggerating about the status of tests and lying about its severity and saying it'll just go away, that's all on him.
Well, we talked about this as well, the idea that it's not his fault, right, that it started. But if it had started under Obama, Donald Trump would be the guy on Fox and Friends saying it was his fault. It was Obama's fault.
During Ebola, he was on Twitter every day
saying,
keep them all out, lock the borders. I mean, during Ebola, he did more fear-mongering than anyone.
I feel like somebody should go to him and say, hey, you don't have to do this because you're Donald Trump, and there's not another one like you out there right now.
I feel like someone should go and say, look, we've had to take down the comms. The Wi-Fi's out. And you're going to have 3 weeks to golf, no Twitter. And his approval rating would go up.
Yeah.
We'd be safer.
But he couldn't stay.
We'd be safer.
Yeah.
His approval rating would go up.
Uh-huh.
The doctors could function without, as you said, the intermittent, dear leader, you're so good at science, baloney. And we'd have a direct line of communication from real experts.
But there are busy things going on. Sometimes, and look, I think people should, if people want to play tennis, they should be able to play tennis. I feel very strongly about this. But I guess it was Thursday of last week, our First Lady, in the middle of a pandemic, post a photo about how the tennis pavilion is going. As someone who is in communications, do you think this is a good time to give people of America an update on the pavilion?
Let me see. No.
Yeah. Are you kind of shockproof at this point when you see something?
Yeah. No, I keep waiting for that. Every morning I wake up and we're getting older, so I feel achy, and then I'm like, am I past the point where he can gall me? And I never am.
And you can still get
galled. I turn on Morning Joe and I'm like shouting at the TV like a lunatic. And if I didn't have my show, I would be that person yelling the news on 6.
Oh, it's nice. Yeah. When I have a hiatus, I just mutter to myself.
I do.
It's very helpful.
I do. I'm in the one in the dog park yelling like, yo, Pence isn't any better. And they're like,
lady, come on. Also, you need a dog to be here. You get to cover us. So we have another night of primaries tomorrow. How have you found, because those are long nights. I think we have six. Is it six tomorrow?
Oh, don't tell me. They didn't tell me. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
Like, I think there's six contests. Yeah, yeah, yeah. How have you found getting through the primary? Have you changed the way you go about it?
Well, so I slid from impeachment, which was, 6 to 8 hours of covering that, right into the they didn't tell me. It was one day. It was impeachment, and, you have to stay late. We've got to. So we eased right into that. Rachel Maddow said to me last week, I've noticed in all these nights that everything you eat is in pellet form. It's like a kibble. It's either a Skittle or a seed or that I don't eat anything. So the greatest impact is probably on the lack of a well-rounded diet. But what an exciting election. I mean, this has not been what anyone thought.
No, it's, heaven forbid we should have anything that goes the way we want it. Or not the way we want it. The way you think it's going to go.
Predictions are dead.
Your first communications job was for the Oakland A's.
Yes.
Coming into this job, you were not a baseball fan?
Well, my job with the Oakland A's?
Yeah.
Well, I just wasn't a baseball expert.
Gotcha.
And so this is part of my sort of life as the Forrest Gump of PR. I ended up helping the Oakland A's. It was my first job out of college. And it was the year of the player strike. And so I was writing, it's maybe where I first got to practice, the art of spin. I was writing press releases about the replacement players and how great they were. They were going to be just as good as the regular players. And this might be how I ended up spinning for Republicans.
Yeah.
They're just as good as the other guys. But It wasn't, you know, and I mean, that's another, it's so funny, the volume of news in every corner. You know, baseball's had a big year, too, news-wise. Yeah.
There are times that I think certain people working for certain teams right now would be like, man, what I would give for a job in the White House.
Yeah. Seems like things
should,
are calm there.
Collaborate,
yeah,
right?
They should collaborate. Hey, thanks so much for being
thanks
here.
So
it's
much
always great
having.
To see you. Have fun tomorrow night. Nicole Wallace, Deadline White House, weekdays at 4 on MSNBC.
This is Henry from Late Down here with Nicole Wallace.
Hi.
Thank you for doing this after talking with Seth and
oh
after doing your own show.
You guys
and
are the best.
I feel like it's probably a little more fun than the...
This is much more fun, yeah. Because it's the same news every every night. You cover the same stories, but somehow you make it funny.
So this week you're covering coronavirus. And I mean, I think all of us have this like mild to serious level of panic.
Yeah.
When you're broadcasting, how do you give the stakes of what's going on without adding to people's panic about it?
You know, I think you don't ignore the panic. People mm-hmm. feel panic, but you just try to get them information. I mean, we've tried to, we're a political show, so we obviously cover the politics. Seth and I talked about it. You know, we are watching a president who spent 3 years lying.
Right.
And now we have to trust him and hope he's right.
So I imagine that's the balance you have to strike all the time on your show. Like the information you're getting out of the White House is not necessarily true. Oftentimes it's blatantly not true.
Or that if it's going to be true, that'll represent a change. It'll be a departure, right? So like I'm a real student of patterns. And mm-hmm. so the pattern has been 16,000 lies and counting. I suppose he could suddenly start telling the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Mm-hmm. But it would represent a detour from the rest of his presidency.
And of course, that's not going to happen now during a crisis when his motive is so clearly to protect himself.
Well, and he's saying it out loud, right?
Yeah.
It's like we're not guessing that he's trying to protect himself. He keeps saying that stuff out loud about the markets, about a miracle. And mm-hmm. look, I mean, I said this to Seth, like for once, I hope his, you know, crazy talk is
sure,
right.
Yeah.
I hope a miracle does sweep the country and erase corona from our country after mm-hmm. ravaging so many others. But it's not the most likely way this ends.
Right.
It most likely ends after a lot of pain, a lot of damage to our economy, a lot of isolated older people that used to go to senior centers, a lot of kids that should be learning in schools. I mean, it's probably going to be really, really, really hard. And I think Trump cannot disentangle his political fortunes from the reality of what he's facing.
He's also famously a germaphobe. And
well, there's that.
You have to imagine, even though he's saying everything's fine, he's personally freaking out.
Yeah, but he's hanging out with all these guys who are with the, you know, right-wing Festivus patient zero. I mean, the CPAC guy was around...
Yeah.
Matt Gaetz and Ted Cruz and these guys that have been around, at least mm-hmm. Matt Gaetz was around the president today.
Was he on the Air Force One? Is that right?
I read that he was on Air Force One today. And the rest of the guys from CPAC who were, I think there are four of them, one senator and three members of Congress mm-hmm. who are self-quarantined. So I don't know if the quarantine includes Air Force One. But, I mean, that's where we are. We don't know if the president was around members of Congress who were quarantined for corona exposure.
Just to step back and think about that is wild. That maybe the president will have to self-quarantine soon is a real question that seems...
Well, and, like, would we notice, right?
Would you notice?
Right? I mean, he's like, I'm not sure what would be different.
And even if his doctor said self-quarantine, he wouldn't do it.
He's like, in this bedroom, like, tweeting with Fox in front. I mean, like, I don't know that anyone would notice. But
right.
I don't... Here's the more serious point. I don't know that he'd tell us.
Yeah, that's true. Also, he'd self-quarantine like a little bit in D.C. He'd do some self-quarantine at Mar-a-Lago.
Bedminster's quarantine.
Yeah.
Golf.
It'd be a loose...
the quarantine golf course. You know, I mean, I don't even know what that would look like.
It is so crazy. Last thing I want to ask you, because there isn't a more primaries tomorrow night.
Yeah.
You were talking with Seth about how you worked on communications in a White House. You also worked on communications on campaigns. When you're broadcasting live on election night, talking to campaign managers who are putting on a good face and saying everything is fine, the numbers are still coming in, we're waiting on, you know, whatever county. Do you feel that pain? Because you know they might just be treading water.
You know, I had Bernie Sanders, deputy campaign manager, on today. And I said, look, it's brave to be out there when all the questions are about, you know, whether or not you still have a path to nomination. He said, it's not brave. I believe in Bernie. And I've said all those things. So I'm super sympathetic. to people that are, and look, this is a topsy-turvy moment in our politics.
Biden was dead in the water.
Yeah, I mean, and Bernie Sanders had a heart attack 4 months ago. So, I mean, these guys, they have health risks that we don't always have. They have volatility in their base of support that we don't always see this late. I mean, it is March. And these voters, you know, really just swarmed to Biden like moths to a flame between, you know, really the first three contests and South Carolina. And then, you know, Super Tuesday was a wave election, the likes of which I don't know that we've ever seen in a primary. I mean, even President Obama, who kind of won the last real wave general election, did not have that kind of wave gravitate toward him, flood toward him without working for it in the 08 primary.
And it was right at the beginning of the night, too. I feel like all of you on the panel were giving us a sense that this is what it's going to be.
I mean, I spent more of my career looking at returns and wave data than I have broadcasting about it. And you look at the reason you don't broadcast it is it can be wrong.
Sure.
But you look at the first couple waves of data that come through, and unless they're wrong, we knew it was a huge night for Biden.
Yeah. Thank you again for being here, taking time
to chat
with us.
Thank you for having me. You guys are so nice. There's so much going on.
Well, we appreciate you honestly taking time to stop by. And I know tomorrow night you're going to be doing the returns again. So I'm looking forward to it.
This will be more fun when I hold the two nights next to each other in my memory jar. So thank you.
Good. Thanks, Nicole.
Thank you.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.